Welcome to We Are The Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are The Watchers.
Tom, we're both caffeinated enough.
Yep, I'm on the Mountain Dew Code Red.
And I've got a Coke, and we are ready to do this thing. It is We Are The Watchers, episode 73. I said that as if it was going to be some sort of looming number, but it's just a number.
It sounded like you were waiting for the Who Wants To Be A Millionaire there, ding, 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 or something yeah. like that, drop in.
I should have had that. We need a live audience in here, and also live band.
Why don't I press the live audience button?
Okay.
Ready, and applause.
Bazinga.
Very nice. We've got.
Hey, thank you, Scott Morrison. Topical.
Very topical. Mm-hmm. But only for the Australian listeners, not viewers.
If anyone's watching this.
How? Get your spy cam out of this studio, please. We don't have any spoiler stuff today.
Nope.
Nothing to spoil. We will be doing a lot of spoiling next week. In fact, the next 6 weeks?
Yeah. There's plenty to come.
Yeah, a whole heap of Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. We will be talking about each and every episode of Game of Thrones as we go through. But we'll still put it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, we'll tuck it away.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
So if you're not up to date, although I think way more than The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones is one of those shows that you have to watch that
ASAP.
Week. Yeah. Even the next day you're going to run into problems.
I try not to go onto social until I've seen it. Once it airs, that's it.
It's kind of difficult even just at a workplace.
Yeah.
So many people are watching it. But, you know, we'll be talking about it as well.
And we've got Avengers coming up as well.
Oh, that's right. That's coming up very soon.
We might even do a bit of a separate one for that one because
we'll
we can jump on
that
pretty quick here in Australia.
Yeah, because we get it a day or two?
Like almost 2 days before because we've got a public holiday and all this sort of stuff happening.
Yeah.
It's worked out very well.
It's worked in our favour and we're not going to question it in case someone realises it's a mistake.
So we'll go and see it and we'll record an episode and we'll put it out. And for our American friends, mm-hmm. you can have it ready to listen to as soon as you've seen the movie.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Download it before you go in and then for your drive home or whatever, have a listen. See if you agree.
We promise it won't be a three-hour show like a three-hour movie.
No. I reckon... Well, when we did our Avengers Infinity War special, I think it was about 20 minutes.
Yeah, we kept it tight.
Yeah.
Because minds were still blown.
We'd only watched it once.
Yep.
You can't, you know, so it was really first impressions.
My brain was snapped.
Yeah. Mine was dusting.
Mm.
A lot of dust.
Mm.
I've got some news stories. I've probably watched a bit more than I have newsied.
Well, I'm the Missy Elliott to you because I'll put it down, flip it and reverse it. I've got a lot of news, some stuff to discuss, and I didn't feel like doing tons of watching. Take that. Not stuff that you guys want to hear about. I watch plenty of like zoo documentaries and things, but we don't need to go into that.
Sometimes you just want to watch something that nobody else wants
to. That's it, my comfort gear.
I understand. Mm. Completely understand. Well, do you want to kick off the news then?
Sure. So Umbrella Academy officially renewed for second season.
Perfect.
That's great.
Look, if you watch the end of it, if you watch the whole season, you would know that they were very much gearing up and they felt very confident that they would get another one.
Yes. So they'll be back. I don't know when that will be. I doubt it will be later this year.
Yeah, I'd say next year.
That's too quick turnaround.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably next year. They also just announced before we went to air that Preacher will be getting season 4. That's coming later this year and that will be the last one.
Oh, okay. So that is right. Okay.
Yep. So there's going to be judgment for Jesse, whether he finds God or not.
That's great, though, to be able to wrap it up in 4 seasons, whether you're a big fan or just a casual fan, the fact that you're going to get a proper ending, because not all shows get that ending.
I hope it is a well-earned ending. Mm. It feels like the first season, especially, they dragged their feet getting on with the show, and then this last season, they've really exploded. There is a lot more story that they could be covering from the comics, but I could also see them streamlining a lot to get to the end. So, yeah.
The best bits of the comic.
Yeah. Speaking of good comics, a few years ago, they do a lot of weird stuff with Archie. Right? So Riverdale obviously
Riverdale,
does really well on TV. But They've had Afterlife with Archie, which was a zombie Archie series, everyone getting eaten. There's one called Jughead the Hunger, which is where Jughead gets scratched or bit by a werewolf and he turns into a werewolf because, you know, he's all about them burgers and stuff.
Yeah, fair enough.
All sorts of weird ones like that. A few years ago, they did Archie versus Predator.
Wouldn't have expected that sentence to be said.
No, so it's Archie and his pals like won a holiday onto a tropical island.
Yeah.
And then when they got there, they were all hunted violently by the Predator.
Holy cow. So these are all official Archie.
Yeah. These are all real
approved
things. And the other ones I was talking about are drawn in horror styles, but Archie versus Predator is drawn in like proper Archie style.
So how's the Predator? Oh, really?
Yeah, he looks...
I'm just trying to picture it.
He looks like a Hanna-Barbera character. It's hilarious. Okay. But he's super violent in this, you know, gaudy 50s cartoon world.
Isn't that cool that you've got such an iconic lot of characters, a brand, you would say, and that they allow people to explore different genres of comics within that one big brand name?
Very much so. And it's not odd, but Archie is very progressive. There's gay characters. There's all sorts of they like to keep with the times. And
definitely not stuck in the 1950s.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's odd that something is very progressive when it looks so retro.
Yeah.
Anyway, they've announced that Archie vs. Predator 2 is coming along soon. And
Had you read the first one?
Oh, yeah.
And it was good?
It was really fun.
Huh.
Silly. Awesome. Very campy silly. It feels like a Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But with Archie characters in the Predator. Yeah. So there's a second one of those coming along later this year. I will keep you posted when you can get your hands on that one because it'll be good fun.
Now that you've mentioned that, Riverdale really doesn't seem like a strange choice.
No. So yeah. I keep waiting on that show for maybe a dream sequence episode or something where it turns zombies. I think there's a Halloween special waiting to happen.
It's very dark, as in the look of it, how it's filmed.
And, it very much feeds into what they've done with Sabrina.
Yeah. And Sabrina itself just lends to that anyway. Yeah. In fact, the fact that they had it as sort of a sitcom at the beginning, not that it's odd, because the time of... When was that? The late 90s. It just makes sense that they would have had that as a...
Yeah.
Late 90s, early 2000s, I think.
It would have been late 90s because Clarissa Explains It All
was 90s.
Early 90s. Yeah, mid-90s
that's right.
Even.
Was that Nickelodeon?
It was.
Yeah. But Sabrina wasn't, I don't think.
No.
Would it have been CW? I can't remember. It was
so long ago. Either.
Yeah.
I don't think the CW was a thing back then.
Dawson was CW. And I think she might have predated Dawson, if I remember.
I was talking with someone yesterday that made me feel very young because we were in a pub and the theme song from Dawson's came on.
Paula Cole? I don't want to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and I was like, oh, Dawson's Hey takes me back. And the person was like, I don't know this song.
Oh.
It's like, oh, you're young. Okay. Did you watch The OC? Yeah, a bit. My older brother liked it.
Like, oh, okay, that's
much younger than I am.
Set you right in a special spot.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I was reading about... Now, the story itself is not necessarily too groundbreakingly interesting, but it's sort of the approach to how television is made these days that sort of made me think about that. So I was talking about the Russian Doll, that Netflix show, Doll, a couple of months ago. I really enjoyed it. It was about reliving your death over and over and over again in all different ways, sort of like your Groundhog Day kind of genre. Would you call a genre Groundhog Day?
Maybe trope.
Okay, trope. So anyway, one of the writers and executive producers was talking about it and how they approached writing it.
Mm.
And they were focusing on, narratively, how to get people watching the next episode. So basically how to binge watch.
Sure, yes, okay.
Not to just go, I like that, I'm going to watch the next episode tomorrow. No, binge watch the whole thing. She was saying that one of the goals was not just to create a show where, you know, everyone watches the entire series, but they are also wanting you to binge watch it again and again and again. So to pick up little bits and go, hang on a second, if I watch that again, in hindsight, you know, with the 2020 now knowing what happened,
yes,
at the end, to go back and check it out, then that's their aim. And I thought that's so interesting, because not only are you bringing up the fact that television now is being written for streaming, for binging,
mm-hmm.
but also multiple watches in a binging style. That's interesting.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And I wonder how, is it restricting? Is it more, like, is it freeing for them, for the writers? I just thought it was an interesting fact that I hadn't really thought about.
Sure. You're almost writing it twice, I think, yeah. in that case. I mean, you think about the big twist with Good Place. They knew it was coming, but not everyone involved knew it was coming. Mm. So if you go back and watch it, you can tell people saying lines that they don't have context for.
That's true. Because I haven't watched all of the first season twice, but mm-hmm. I've watched probably the first three or four episodes.
Sure.
Again, having known the twist. And yeah, you're right. It's a very different watch.
So I've watched first season three times now, and they're very different each time, because that first time you don't know what's going on. The second time you know, and you're watching for who knows.
Yeah, yeah.
And the third time you've got that stuff, but you go back and you pick up little things that the writers have tipped off the set decorator to do in the background and this
wow.
sort of stuff. Yeah. Very, very intricate layering.
And isn't that interesting, because that show is not thrown out in one series at a time. That's thrown out week to week.
Very much so.
So in order to have it they're catering to so many different audiences. Binge watchers, re-watchers, re-watch binge watchers, and the weekly watchers.
And they put it out, the digital version they put out is normally a minute and a half longer than the air version.
I didn't realise that.
And specifically edited that way. So nothing... It's all inconsequential stuff. It might be a few extra jokes or something like that, but it's, again, another reason to watch it in a different format. It's very clever.
That's very clever.
The show with a car that time travels at 88, but blows up if it drops below 50. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
So Gary Sanchez Productions, you might not know the name, but you know their stuff. It's Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, their production company.
Yeah, right.
They did... You know, yeah, Anchormans and all those movies they did together.
Step Brothers, probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
They also set up and run Funny or Die.
Oh, I did know that. Yeah.
You might remember there was that weird video back in the day of early internet of Will Ferrell being berated by a baby.
Yeah.
Yes. That was the very first thing Funny or Die did. They're shutting down their production company.
Why? Is there any word as to why? Is there
it's not
issues?
No, it doesn't look like they are. Like, they're best friends from back in Saturday Night Live days, because
yeah.
they you know, came in at the same time, and Adam McKay became the head writer and all this sort of stuff. They've been tight for years. They're just very different. They're doing very different things now.
Okay.
Adam McKay for the last 5 years has focused on doing The Big Short and Vice, you know, very serious political drama.
And Will Ferrell is not doing that.
No. And I think Will Ferrell needs to have a bit of a spell, a little bit of a time off, and come back.
Before he goes to Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Look, he's great in weird small roles, and he's an excellent team player.
Mm.
But it's just they keep putting him in these movies where he's got to be big and bold and loud, and that style of comedy isn't landing right now. So I hope he can go off and have a bit of quiet time, come back. Anyway, there's all sorts of other stuff I don't know all the reasoning behind, but they both said it was very amicable. It's just they're not working on productions together.
Right.
So it's better they have their own production companies.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So I wonder if Will Ferrell will continue to do producing, or if he'll sort of try and take a different avenue. Although having your own production company would give you the opportunity to go a different acting avenue.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I think it's partly that, and I think it's also because that company is known for a very particular brand of comedy,
yep.
and that's not what they're doing at the moment. So, you know, stepping away from what they were known for.
Fair enough.
Yeah, try something different.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what both of them do in the next couple of years.
Very much so, because, you know, we don't really think of it now, but Funny or Die was like ground bait breaking
oh, yeah.
when it first happened.
Like when you heard that a famous actor or singer or someone of note had done a brand new Funny or Die skit, you were like, oh, quick, let's go watch it.
It got so big, Between Two Ferns had Obama on while he was president.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah, exactly. This tiny little production company making silly internet videos.
Even now is unbelievable. Like, you can't imagine Trump doing that
mm-hmm.
for many reasons. Hey, look, you would have seen this story, but I found the last couple of sentences the most interesting. So Zoe Saldana, super happy that James Gunn's back doing Guardians of the Galaxy franchise. She's like, oh, very proud, you know, that Disney and the executives have made this decision, blah, blah, blah. But what I thought was interesting is there was a question asked at the end of the article, will Gamora show up in Endgame? And she said that the partial scripts and multiple shoots that she's done have left her puzzled as to her character's final disposition. I don't want to get too spoilery, but I also feel like the movie's a year old now because I want to ask a question.
Mm.
She's one of the characters in that. In fact, she could be the only character in that movie whose ending was not dust related. Do you know anything from the comics?
Yep.
Are they going to take it from the comics and
potentially.
Okay.
You might remember she, and again, sorry, we said no spoilers earlier, but if you haven't seen Infinity War at this point, you're a year behind a huge thing. She died in order to unlock that stone for him, and that stone has been used in the comics as a nexus for souls, a collection point.
Right.
So she could be in the stone.
Yeah.
So could everyone who got dusted.
Yeah, all in the one stone.
She could be a queen of a realm there because she was there longer than others. Who knows?
Interesting, because I mean, I don't know too much about the comics.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that people who have read the comics have, it's sort of like The Walking Dead. They take big chunks and they also leave some bits out and add extra stuff.
Yes, I can
they
see them.
They change it around enough.
I can see them doing a swerve. I think it's important that, look, we may see Gamora again. I think it's very important that Nebula is still alive. The blue, her half-sister, the blue chick, who was with Tony Stark in space last we saw.
Right.
So the fact that she's still around and pissed off at Thanos and is going to be doubly so because she just reconciled with her sister and Guardians and this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe a soul for a soul.
Ooh, maybe. Exciting. We're so close to Endgame.
Very, very close.
Very good. More news.
Okay, so the next few ones I've got are all kind of, oh, there was some Walking Dead news this morning about this spin-off, this second spin-off.
Spin-off that we knew was going to be a thing potentially, but we didn't know anything about it.
Correct. Word is that it's moving forward, planned for next year, 2020, to air, not to start production.
Holy cow.
So they'd start filming later this year.
Get cracking.
And it's going to be apparently following two young females. That the main characters, the two main characters, are going to be females because the show has been continually tracking well with women over the last few years.
Mm. Now I'm trying to figure out why. I mean, obviously, I'm a woman and I love The Walking Dead, but I wonder what aspect of it is keeping us watching more than men.
I think it's because there's as many, if not more, strong female leadership characters on the show than there are guys. They've killed off so many of the guys.
Yeah.
You think through Michonne, Carol, Tara, Maggie, almost all the leaders are powerful women.
Mm. Jadis.
Anyway, I can't speak to that reason. The other reason why there is this one coming is more of a financial thing. I read that between Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, AMC made $240.2 million in ad revenue in 2018.
Wow.
So that's why they're making Walking Dead movies.
Yeah.
Because if they can make that money off the weekly show, you imagine how much they can make three times a year for a massive event television.
That's unbelievable. That's such a huge amount.
Yep.
And I know that we've gotten half of, what season? Season 9? Yeah, half of season 9 was in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But the season before that was not as big. I feel like this season, this previous season, 9, has really gotten a resurgence for The Walking Dead. And we've spoken about that. But also you can sort of see it in people's comments on social media and whatnot.
There's a lot more positivity towards it.
Yeah. It's almost, I mean, it does feel very fresh. But, yeah, absolutely. There's that sort of who watches The Walking Dead anymore? Yep. That sort of narrative online has gone a bit and been taken over by, this season's been really good. I've picked it up again.
Yep.
So maybe this is a perfect time for this show to come out. No wonder it sounds like they're fast-tracking the hell out of it to have it ready by next year. And two female leads. I'm going to guess there's no sort of tie-in. It may just be a standalone.
Nothing said yet.
Story somewhere else? Because who could it be?
Look, it wouldn't surprise. It won't be, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did Clementine from the game.
Oh, wow, because people love Clementine.
Yep, and there's no more of those games coming.
They're done.
Yep.
Her story's done.
So potentially, there's something in that idea. You know, in the same way it looks like what they're going to do for Last of Us 2 with, you know, Ellie, big sister relationship. I could see something like that working. We'll see.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
So the next few ones I've got, some of this is behind the scenes gear, like industry stuff. Number one, Hellboy, Thursday. I'm so excited. By the time you're hearing this, everyone, I'll probably be watching, if not, have already seen Hellboy.
Yeah.
In Australia, rated R. For everyone overseas, if you're wondering, that's R18. You're going to be 18 and over to get in. You can't. So, it's not a go with a parent. That's MA.
I have to assume that's like violence and gore, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Extreme gore.
Wow.
I'm hearing like not just decapitation, but like decapitation, then flaying and skinning and...
Real medieval stuff.
Very much so. It's directed by one of the Game of Thrones directors.
Okay.
It's meant to be full horror, not a whimsical comedy like the old Hellboy movies were.
If I did any sort of research, which I'm clearly not going to do whilst we're recording, but if I could make a guess as to an episode that this director potentially could have filmed, Mountain and the Viper?
No.
Oh, it's not Watermelon Head.
No. He
makes sense though, right?
Yes, he did the battle with the whites at Hardhorn.
Oh, that was a great...
The the frost
such
zombies.
Such a great episode, yes. Yeah.
So that's kind of what got him this gig. Anyway, got rated R, and the studio pushed back and said, can you reclassify, please? And it's the first thing to try in 2019 in Australia. So normally it's only video games. Maybe
Video games get it hard out here.
Maybe we'd get a film every now and then. But the first thing this year pushing back on classification was Hellboy, and the classification board came back and said, nope, you're still rated R.
Ooh, okay.
That keeps me excited. Like, I know it's not great for the box office because there's plenty of teens that want to go along and see it, but they'll get in if they want.
Yeah, if they really want to.
They'll download it and stream it. Although, LimeWire it.
No,
I don't
won't.
Know. I don't know what the kids do.
Pretty sure LimeWire doesn't exist anymore.
Get it on Kazaa, then we'll go for Napster. So there you go. The most hardcore thing of the year so far is Hellboy.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Nope. And then when you're watching Netflix on your device, do you watch it on the device or do you watch it on the TV from the device?
TV from the most of the time, TV from the device.
And are you using AirPlay to do that?
No, I'm watching it on PS4.
Okay, cool, because it's got the app there.
Yeah.
Well, this is behind-the-scenes stuff, but Netflix have announced that they're no longer they've discontinued support for AirPlay on iOS devices. So I don't know if you've ever used AirPlay. Watching it on your iPad or your phone, and you wirelessly ping it or send it to the TV or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Now, Netflix is saying the reason why they've done this is because Apple have recently launched AirPlay 2, which works across every device, all sorts of things. Netflix is saying that opens them up to all sorts of issues because it now works across third-party things, TVs, things that they're not necessarily set up for. And because people are paying a premium for their product, they can't guarantee that they're going to get the best result on that screen.
Okay, so it almost opens them up for issues, complaints.
Yes, that's what they say. Pretty much any smart TV sold today already has Netflix app installed. So it's not an issue there. I think they're just being a bitch.
Because
Apple's about to launch their own streaming service.
Yeah.
And it's the same reason why they got rid of all the Marvel shows, because they don't want to promote Disney stuff. I think Netflix is a little bitch.
Do you think that it's going to be one of those situations where they do stuff like this and then they end up backing themselves into a corner? Or are they too big?
They're too big. Because it's a hassle jumping around. Like, There's a few shows on Amazon Prime I'd be interested in checking out, but to see them here in Australia, there's VPNs, there's all these hoops to jump through. Mm-hmm. If I could pay $3 more on Netflix a month for that stuff, I'd do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't see this hurting Netflix. It's such a tiny thing. Like, the people that would be using AirPlay to stream on a TV would be minuscule of the actual population of people watching Netflix.
Yeah, true. And there's always other ways around.
Yeah. So it's not a big deal and people will adjust quickly, but it feels like just kind of a dick petty move. Right.
Yeah. I'm totally hearing you.
But they're the big dogs, so they could do that if they want. There's a reason why they're the biggest.
Mm.
They make calls like that.
Yeah. They're ballsy. But imagine being ballsy towards Apple, like it just sounds full on, doesn't it?
Bold. It's very, very bold. And finally, the last one.
Yeah.
So this is me connecting some dots, right? Okay. I didn't realize this, but you know how Disney bought Fox recently?
Mm.
And that all went through.
Mm.
There's one thing in that deal that you and I never even considered.
What's that?
We have Fox Studios here in Sydney.
Oh.
Yeah, Disney now own Fox Studios.
Because around... late 90s,
yep.
Fox Studios became a thing.
Yes.
And if I recall correctly, the Australian government were saying, come on out, it's cheaper here. The Australian dollar's pretty bad compared to the American dollar. Come out here, film your movies. Film them on the Gold Coast as well, so you got like two great facilities. And then it all just kind of washed away.
Yeah, well, look, part of Fox Studios' issues was that it was trying to basically be Universal Studios Hollywood, in that they had the theme park area at the front, which was very small and, if we're honest, quite undeveloped.
Mm.
And then studios in the back that maybe didn't have the volume of work needed to support a full studio. So the theme park didn't last too long. For those of you who never went, there was like a life-size recreation of the Titanic and a Simpsons ride, and there was a walk-around set from Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Yeah, very specific of an era time.
Very much so. And they've made plenty of TV shows and things out there for years, and they have done certain films and stuff. I'm pretty sure that's where The Matrix was made.
I think so. I also think they might have had – there was some sort of Star Wars –
yes, they were very involved with Phantom Menace.
Right. Yeah, well, and the that other makes ones sense. As well. Yeah, so it was around then. Now I don't know what's going on with that whole area, but I know that AFTERS, the Australian Film TV Radio School, are there. I don't know if they've taken some of the area or
some of the what used to be editing suites for the studio is now used by the school.
Yeah, right.
So it all is still used in various ways, shapes and form. Mm. It's also they film a lot of promos and advertising and all that.
Makes sense.
Behind the scenes kit out there. With Disney now owning that, and it's funny you talk about the Australian government stepping in. This is a developing story. So by the time you're hearing this, this story may be a lot further along.
Uh-huh.
But the Australian government yesterday has offered $171.1 million to Marvel.
So they are going to give Marvel that much money?
Yep, 171.
As an incentive to film here? Is that
to film at Fox Studios in Australia. And then they're offering an additional $7.1 million per year that they film in New South Wales.
Jeez.
So it's not just filming on the Gold Coast in Australia. It's come film in New South Wales, bring the jobs here as well.
So it's federal and state both throwing money.
Yes.
Wow.
Now, this is interesting for a few reasons. So Marvel has a habit of putting down a flag somewhere and filming a bunch of films there for a couple of years in a row. So they did that over in London. And then when the studios were finished in Atlanta, pretty much everything Marvel's made over the last couple of years has all been shot down in Atlanta.
Interesting.
Thor Ragnarok was made up on the Gold Coast. Obviously, went really well for them.
What, did Chris go, nah, I just want to drive to work every day?
Very much so. He said, let's film in Australia. He's got a lot of power around there.
He's a big name.
Yes. So all of a sudden, Australia's looking a lot more enticing. And if Disney now owns this new studio with all the studio space, they tend to come in, find a studio they like, pump money in and do it up and get it really nice and then use it for quite a while. So there's a strong chance that they can come down here. That $171 million would cover the budget of a Marvel movie plus some money for promotion. And a lot of a Marvel movie, basically, you can probably, like, they never confirm it, but they might spend 2/3 to 1 1/3 of the budget on media promotion, all that sort of stuff around. So that budget there, it'll be interesting to see what they announce for doing down here. Because if they're announcing like a Doctor Strange 2 or one of the, you know, a Guardians 3, one of the big movies we've already had and it's a sequel, then that budget, that money they're giving would cover the budget of the film and they would spend the rest on promotion. But if they were to launch one of their new property films, like Shang-Chi, which is the martial arts master of Kung Fu, or The Eternals, which is the one that Angelina Jolie is supposedly in the running for.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about. Yeah, I've heard those rumours.
If they were to do one of those films, that would probably be more in the $80 to $130 million, which would leave a huge chunk over for doing promotion. So I think when we find out what they might be considering doing, it will give us an idea of what they intend to do with the studio. It's a much safer bet to film one of the sequels here, but then they have to spend more money on promotion later. Whereas if they roll the dice and do one of these small ones down here and see how it goes and put the investment in and stuff like that, it's just going to be interesting. But I looked further in my crystal ball.
Yes.
So Disney, Ryan, are about to launch their streaming service. And a big part of that has been Marvel TV shows they want to do. And their hub for that before was New York, which with Netflix, of the Defenders shows they were doing. What's to say that they couldn't use the Sydney studios as their TV division for the streaming service?
Wow.
So there's a lot of different options for what they could be doing. But if they were to do that, then it means that they can continue to use Atlanta solely as their film studio and like the big one. And then down here, we could be a really interesting breeding testing ground for stuff they do on TV and see whether that builds to a film later or a lot more of the interconnectivity.
This is really cool.
This is very exciting.
This is the beginning of some really awesome stuff potentially. And look, just getting back to afters, you can just imagine all the film students and editing students going, we're right next door.
That's right. There's a lot of work potentially about to come.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
So as I say, this is going to be developing. It will be a very, very big news story if this goes through. Some people are going, oh, can't you spend money on my... It's less than a 20th of the stupid bloody stadium they're building next door. So simmer down. This is for culture.
It's not all about sport.
That's right. I think this is a very good thing for our industry. We've wanted to be taken seriously for a while. We've had to watch all the big films go up to Gold Coast, which is cool. It's great to have them made in Australia, but the chance to let Fox Studios have another run at the shot. Yeah.
It's sitting there.
Yeah.
Unused-ish. Wow. All right. Well, you finished on a nice...
It was a juicy one.
...news ending. Should we get into some watching?
Sure.
The show that knows more than Jon Snow. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Now, I know that you did less watching than newsing.
Yes.
So maybe I'll kick it off.
Yeah, please do. I need to hear some. I've heard enough from my voice.
You've exhausted yourself. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the Brie Larson movie that she directed called Unicorn Store?
I do. I saw a trailer up on Netflix.
Yeah, I wanted to check it out, see what it was like, because I also saw it had a Samuel L. Jackson looking... amusing,
yeah,
in a purpley pink kind of suit and this amazing wig with all this glitter coming out of it. It was gorgeous. Oh. The movie was not exactly what I thought, but I suspect if I watched the trailer again, it would be exactly what I thought it would be. I don't know. It almost had a touch of the... It was quirky. But you know, sometimes you get those cheaper movies and they're a little bit quirky and you watch them and you go, ah, the story's a bit weird, but it's kind of endearing. It probably wasn't made for millions of dollars, so...
Yeah, everyone involved had fun for 3 weeks.
Exactly.
Off from their main job.
I kind of feel like this is what this was.
This is your Paul Rudd not summer film.
Yes.
I know exactly what you're talking about. The Jonah Hill not trying to impress Martin Scorsese film.
Those ones. Mm-hmm. That's what this was. And also I think it was Brie Larson going, I'm Captain Marvel now. I probably want to start stretching my arms and legs and getting some creativity happening in Hollywood because I can.
Yep.
I'm a name. But she also had Joan Cusack and Bradley Whitford in it. They were her parents.
What a pair.
They were having a lot of fun together. They were amazing parents. At one point,
I did not see them in any trailer, because that pairing has me more excited than anyone else you've mentioned.
Anything in the world. Well, Joan at one point, I'm pretty sure it was her, said, come on inside. We'll have some quinoa. So that's the kind of parents that they are. You know, those understanding parents that want to talk it through.
Have I told you that she was one of my first crushes?
No way, really?
Yeah, because of the Addams Family.
Hang on, who was she in the Addams Family?
She's the one that lures Uncle Fester.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why, but yeah, ever since then, I've had a thing for Joan Cusack.
That's amazing. Uh-huh. You've got to watch this now, obviously.
Uh-huh. But she's hot in School of Rock as well.
I remember her in stuff like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. In fact, does she actually leave the school bus? I think you only see her in the school bus.
I think you're right.
I don't think she's in any other setting.
She's awesome.
She is very awesome. Look, I had fun watching the movie. I would give it 7 unicorns out of 10.
That sounds like a whole lot of unicorn farts.
There was a lot of... Where are you going to see a unicorn? And also, if that doesn't entice you, Samuel L. Jackson is really enjoying being... But like, his character is just almost like your Willy Wonka.
Okay. So is it like silly? Like, did you see Kingsman? Do you remember that? Where it was the bad guy hit the lift behind boy? Like, oh, you okay, Sam's made a choice. He's going to stick with it. Let's see where this goes.
It's not so much a... No, it's more a visual choice. At one point, he's riding around on a scooter just because I'm going to ride, push myself around on a scooter.
Scoot,
like
scoot.
A razor sort of scooter. So,
okay.
Look, I'm glad I watched it. I checked it out. I also did another movie watch. Mm-hmm. I watched, speaking of you were talking about Australian films and, well, the industry, I watched Muriel's Wedding for the first time in years.
Muriel's Wedding?
Yes. Yeah,
oh, so that takes me back. Haven't thought of that film in years.
No, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
No weird connections for me to that film.
Linkless. So I went and saw the musical about a year ago, and that had Gina Reilly's daughter as Muriel.
Right.
And Rachel Griffith's character, whose name I can't remember right now, but the actress who was playing that role in the musical was amazing. And I remember Rachel Griffith being pretty amazing. Like, that was the first thing I think...
Yeah, it was a bit of a breakout.
We'd seen either of them in. Yeah. And watching it, oh my God, are they young. They just look so young. Do you remember Sophie Lee was a thing?
Yeah.
She looks like she's about 12.
Sure.
And at that point in time, she was known. And then there was another girl. There was one
that pre or post Castle? I think Muriel's was before Castle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might have been.
I think Muriel 94?
Yes.
Yeah, because Castle was around 97, I reckon.
Yeah, I had that on cassette, like as in bought cassette.
Nice.
And I'd lent the Castle cassette to somebody, and I don't know who it was. Suddenly a year after, or however long after I realised I'd lent it to someone, I couldn't remember who it was, so I was just asking people, and I just got these blank looks.
You were trying to get your movie back.
I was trying to get my movie
back. You were dreaming.
There's one thing about Muriel that I remembered is that there's a lot of it that is not funny. There's a lot of it that's really quite sad.
Yeah, there's a bit of heaviness going
there's
on that one,
there's a
bit
of heaviness going on, and so I was totally ready for that. But it's just good. Like, they're just so good. And the woman, like her mother in that show, watching it this time round, I finished watching it, she was all I could think about.
Okay.
I suspect if I was not young when I first saw it, I also probably would have been leaving the movie theatres thinking about the mother, the character. It was amazing. Anyway, if you haven't seen it for ages, or if you've never seen it before, go and watch it. There are some very iconic lines that potentially you don't know are from Muriel's Wedding.
Yeah, whether things are good or terrible. Find out.
That's right.
It's good.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
So I mentioned this show a while ago that it was coming up, but it finally hit the first episode of Bon Appetit.
Yeah. Now look, if anything, it was the name that sounded like it was going to be amazing. If you can create a name like that.
That's right. Well, they've done 2 seasons of this before, but it was like some dude with a big house and he'd have people come over and they'd cook stuff infusing weed into things.
I don't know much about this, so it didn't, and it was difficult to latch onto and stuff. Well, they've rebooted the show entirely, and now it's basically Top Chef but with weed.
Wow!
So this first episode was called Pot Chef, but it was spelt small p, small o, large t, and then they held mirrors up everywhere, so they couldn't call themselves Top Chef. But when all the mirrored reflections, very you clever. Saw Top Chef written in the background and stuff everywhere. And they had three Top Chef former contestants on who all run award-winning restaurants.
Yeah, right.
None of who had ever cooked with weed before. And they all, you know, got given challenges, and it's your typical cooking show.
Yeah.
It's hosted, and the main judge is B-Real from Cypress Hill.
Oh, really?
And then he's got a woman who runs a edibles company, and then a dude that runs a bunch of really good restaurants. And they have a celebrity guest judges each week. This week was George Clinton from Funkadelic and Parliament.
Wow.
And they just hang around upstairs and smoke weed while these people cook downstairs.
And now, do they just chat, like give commentary and stuff?
Yeah. So it's just like watching any cooking show.
Yeah.
And because of that, 10 minutes in, I'm like, oh, this is a bit boring. I don't know if I'm feeling this. Well, it was interesting that I said those exact words, and I don't know if I'm feeling this, because it's a show about people making and eating edibles, and they take a long time to come on. And this show, over the course of the hour, got weirder and weirder in a really good way, because these contestants two of them had never smoked weed or been near weed or anything like that. So them cooking with this stuff, and they've got to keep tasting.
Yeah, they've got to taste it.
And sampling. And like by the second round, one of the dudes is midway through making a meal and wanders off to go order a pizza. And gets a dude.
That is hilarious.
He's like legit making something with foie gras, and he orders a pepperoni pizza because he has the munchies so bad. He had the munchies he had to eat.
So he couldn't focus.
But he couldn't eat the food he was preparing
because
he was
going to
make it worse. So they all just got in this weird fucked up loop of trying to make this food that they didn't know much about, and they'd have to sample to make sure it's not too hardcore. And the stuff they were making, like even B-Real's like, this is hardcore. You've put in a lot. You don't really have any gauge for what's a lot, and you've put in like a lot, so do this. There was a fantastic moment where they'd done all the, you know, one of them had been eliminated, mm-hmm. and they were about to move on to the dessert round. But to show off their culinary skills, they had to chop up weed as quickly as possible and roll five joints, then place them in this weird long pipe thing that had five holes for the judges to then smoke all five at once through this pipe and comment on how good they were at preparing, you know, in the same way you'd go into the restaurant and they'd chop up your onion. It was showing off that sort of thing. Anyway.
This is amazing.
B-Real's got this thing, and it looks like a didgeridoo with five 24-carat gold-wrapped joints.
What?
Sucking down in this thing. And the female contestant who'd never smoked or been around weed was like, this is crazy. Have you guys ever smoked five joints at once before? And B-Real go, yes. Just so matter-of-fact casual, like clearly he's done that. For no reason at all, there's this fantastic bass player called Thundercat. He just showed up. He wasn't there, and then he was. Yeah, I don't know if he just dropped by when they were filming or what. Like this dude, he hangs around Vice a lot. Like he pops up on Action Bronson show and all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
But I don't know why. He was just suddenly there smoking weed with all of them, not playing bass or anything.
He's just there.
Making jokes.
Oh, that's hilarious. So is this a weekly show?
Yeah. I think there's maybe five or six more episodes and then there'll be a finale. It's on Vice so they can get away with whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
It is out of control.
It's hilarious.
And I'm so glad I stuck around with it to the end, because if I just, that initial hit of the show of just, this just feels like a cooking show, this is kind of boring.
Yeah.
But once the effects started to kick in on the contestants, this show just morphed into something else.
And now, because potentially a problem with an episode with a show like that is like you've already seen the hilarity, so to watch another episode like it's the same hilarity. But I also wonder if maybe you watch the second episode and because it's different people, they react differently, and also you're expecting it, so you're watching it from different eyes.
I have a feeling they're going to theme contestants. So this first one was Top Chef themed. I think they're going to have one from people that work in chefs who work in restaurants that do infuse with weed already.
Yeah,
and you know. maybe they have one episode where it's like Snoop versus Method Man, or you know, like there's all sorts of fields they can pull from to make interesting things and then smoosh all together for a grand finale. But it really surprised me of just
where they went
and these people that were not experienced with this stuff at all were willing to jump in and have a go. And the food they made looked fantastic. It looked so delectable.
Yeah.
But just, you know, everyone had very red eyes and were very giggly. And this guy was so happy with his pizza.
I bet he was.
He's running around trying to offer it to everyone. And they're like, go and cook.
He's being friendly. Uh-huh. That's nice.
Getting lost in Robert Ford's narrative. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the fact that Project Blue Book was going to be on SBS.
I do remember.
And SBS On Demand. Well, I've watched 4 episodes of it. Mm-hmm. I am 100% on board with that.
You're into this?
Yeah. So it's a combination of X-Files, but they play, because it's set in the 1950s, they play all this, or maybe 60s. Anyway, that era, they play all this old school music. So then suddenly I feel like I'm in some sort of Fallout game.
It's Mad Max Files.
It is, and I'm loving it.
Yeah?
And I didn't think. I was like, Littlefinger is just going to be Littlefinger in my eyes all the time. No.
It falls away pretty quick.
That's the sign of a great actor.
Yeah.
It's on weekly here in Australia on SBS, or you can just watch all the episodes on SBS On Demand, and that's what I've been doing.
Demanding.
There should be like 5 episodes by the time this comes up.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 10 episodes all up.
So, yeah, we're almost halfway through. Yeah. I like it.
I got picked up for a second season.
Oh, good. I'll be watching it. Yeah, it's really good.
I got 3 trailers for you. We'll go through them real quick.
Nice.
Number one, most people won't care, but in our household, big news, Descendants 3 trailer dropped.
Hello.
It looks very dark. Hades is involved. Shay reckons.
Bloody Hades.
For anyone who's interested and understands what this means, Shay thinks that Mal's father is going to be Hercules. Lindsay thinks it's going to be Hades. I am abstaining from a choice this time.
Okay, all right. You reserve the right not to make a reservation.
Staying on the fence.
Okay.
But it looks darker than the other ones. And it also looks like they've moved away from standalone movies to this is just the next chapter.
Okay. I think that works well.
That's cool. Secondly, did you see the trailer for The Joker? Joaquin?
Yes. We saw, okay, so what did we see? We saw a photo a couple of months ago, maybe?
Yeah, set photos that were taken. And then he shared, not Zack Snyder. What's his name? Todd Phillips, the director. We'll come back to that. He shared some photos a while back. It looks better than I was expecting. You know, I've seen a great meme going around of how do you make Joker in 1999? Throw him in a vat of chemicals. How do you make him today? Throw him into society.
That's good.
The trailer looks good, but I go back to the fact that there's director Todd Phillips, who brought us such fantastic things as Old School or The Hangover, or good films,
different,
but not dark psychological things.
Yeah.
If he can rein in his silly habits that are very great in the comedy world, and I love plenty of his movies, don't get me wrong, but this needs to be very tragic. So I got high hopes.
Got Joaquin in there. Joaquin, I reckon.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think if this is Todd Phillips growing up in the same way that I was skeptical about The Big Short, Adam McKay directing a serious film, but then when I saw it, I was like, okay, he can do this.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's what I'm really, really hoping for this film. I got a good feeling about it.
Good. I'm glad.
I am nervous. The other trailer that got me amped came out yesterday, I think, called Stuber. Did you see this at all?
No, what's Stuber?
So it's Dave Bautista.
Oh, yeah.
He's a cop.
Yep. Has he got hair?
It's very, very short, it looks like. He has very tight shirts.
Okay.
And Kumail Nanjiani, he is an Uber driver named Stu.
Hey, Stuber. I'm Stuber.
He picks up Bautista.
Uh-huh.
Bautista is undercover, potentially, or something, and then they head out on a buddy comedy forcing the Uber driver to get into violence.
And?
It looks very, very funny and also very, very violent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It looks like, remember that movie with Tom Cruise getting driven around by Jamie Foxx?
Yeah.
He's a hitman.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like a comedic take on that, which is an odd one.
I've just got Minority Report.
It's not
head.
Minority.
It's not, 100% not, but I can picture Tom Cruise in it.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I just can't think of the name. Shout it right now.
Thanks, listener.
That was great.
Excellent. I've
told you enough of what I've watched.
Okay. Now, we don't have a spoiler section, but we still, of course, have the quiz.
Quiz. Quiz.
This one's called Who's Got a Bigger Instagram? We have six of them. They're kind of, I've kind of found equals, and then you have to tell me who's got a bigger Instagram following. Sophie Turner or Amelia Clark?
Sophie Turner, because she's married to Joe Jonas. No. Is she married to him?
I think she's the one that's not married. I think they're...
Oh, they're with each other. That's yeah. right. Yeah, yeah, it's the other two.
It's the other two that are married.
They got married because they want to get their purity ring off.
Yeah, and Joe... He got rid of that years ago. Care. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, I'm going with her.
Well, it's actually Amelia. 19.6 million and Sophie's got 9.7.
Oh.
So the Jonas angle is not working for her.
Maybe it's yet. All those Terminator fans that went over to Amelia Clark.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's...
Star Wars?
Oh, yeah, I forget that she was in that.
She's done quite a... Yeah, she's definitely got the big names. All right, Norman Reedus and Danai Gurira.
I'm going to say Norman Reedus because of the Boondock Saints, a film he did in the late 90s, a proper cult classic. They did a sequel to it a few years ago. They're still trying to make a third.
Well, you're right. I mean, I don't know if that's the reason, but you're right. He's got 6.2 million and Ms. Michonne herself is 2.9 million.
I reckon as well she probably wouldn't engage as much as he does.
He's on there a lot.
He'd be like, man, look at this dumb.
And I feel like he's got a bigger handle. Like, he personally uses his account more than other stars use theirs.
Oh, sure. And he does conventions.
Yeah, he does.
He does signings at conventions and that sort of stuff.
He's there all the time.
So, yeah.
I wonder because of Black Panther, she might have.
Sure. But she's a playwright.
Yeah, she's very thespian. Oh. God, her hair looks amazing these days. I just can't get over it. Brie Larson, Gal Gadot. So Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman.
Got to be Wonder Woman, right? Yeah?
By a lot.
Because she's a model.
Yeah, that too. She's like every second photograph is her with like a watch or a dress.
She's married to someone, isn't she?
I don't know. I don't know. Listen, enough about
I think she might be married.
Okay. And Brie may not be.
Maybe not. Who knows?
28.6 million to Brie's 4.2.
That's a lot for that gal.
All right. This one I reckon you're going to know.
Okay.
PlayStation or Xbox?
Ooh.
Just Instagram.
I'm going to go PlayStation.
Yeah. 17.2 to 8.7 million.
Ooh.
What about Mr. John Cena? Versus The Rock.
Oh, that's a difficult one. Not. John Cena, you can't see him. He's damn invisible. So all his photos are just camouflage pants running around. It's The Rock.
Yeah.
He's one of the biggest personalities in any social media platform.
Do you want to have a random stab in the dark as to the number?
Instagram. I'm going to guess 80-something.
137 million
there you go.
Followers. Mr. John's got 11.2, which, to be honest, like,
still
that's
very
still
respectful.
Insanely amazing, but the Rock. And finally, Robert Downey Jr. or Chris Hemsworth?
Ooh. I'm going to say Hemsworth because I think Chris... No, I got Chris Evans in my head now.
No, not Chris Evans.
Chris Evans is Mr. Twitter.
Yeah, I don't even
and
know if he's
Robert
got
Downey
an Instagram
Jr.
account.
Loves a bit of Facebook.
Oh, does he?
He posts a lot of stuff because he knows a lot of his fans are a little bit older,
yeah.
So he loves getting it up on a bit of Facebook.
Oh, he's clever.
So I'm going to go with Hemsworth because he likes to take his shirt off, and that's what Instagram is for.
He's going to get the likes.
Shirts off, family photos, bare feet.
Beach.
Look at his hammer.
Well, Robert Downey Jr. is actually just ahead, not by much though, 29.7 million to Chris's 26.6. Very close. Very, very close.
Come on. He's not Hemsworthy. Get him up. Go and follow him.
Go on. Yeah. Come on, Aussies. Come on.
Give him that gram.
Yeah. I'm going to double tap.
Mm.
Oh, no, you double tap to like. You just hit once to follow.
I don't know.
I do, because we're very busy on Instagram. And by we, I mean me. But I do it on behalf of us, Tom.
That's right. You handle Instagram and I do other things.
Yeah, like you do other things.
Ravens.
Ravens. I forgot about ravens.
Yeah, and I comment with, I commune with the ethereal spirits.
Somebody has to, and I get scared.
Yeah, I got no problem.
Well, we are the Watchers Podcast on Instagram if you want to follow us. We do way more there than we do on Facebook because only Robert Downey Jr. really does stuff on Facebook these days. Oh, we're Twitter as well.
Yeah, hey, come and say hi on Twitter.
Come and say hi on Instagram.
We might say now that if you follow us, it's a good idea because we might have some really special content coming in a few days.
There's stuff happening.
And big stuff happening over the next few weeks, but there's some fun kit coming out in the next few days that you might want to use yourself. You can take and use it as you like.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, we'll share, literally share.
Yeah.
Love it. Tom, thank you very much.
No, let me think of something. I don't want to do another silence. I froze up. Laces out, Dan.